This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with me, Melissa Idris, Julian Ng and Ibrahim Sani. 7:47 right now. We've got EPF's new Sharia compliant savings scheme, which will be open for registration on August 8th. So the CEO of EPF, Datuk Shahril Rizza, he said that the fund had already allocated an initial 100 billion ringgit investment. Had allocated an initial 110 billion ringgit, which is about 15% of its total investment assets as of March.
I think it'd be a mad scramble for this is on a first-come, first-served basis, and only 100 billion out of the 700 billion that EPF has been allocated for Sharia investments. And it is extremely challenging for EPF to actually build a fully Sharia-compliant portfolio simply because there's not enough Sharia stocks in the market.
Yeah, and because of the fact that there's not enough Sharia stocks in the market, that whole allocation is going to be very, very tight. And it's not just going to be for this year. It's going to be like this for years to come as well.
Okay, so it's not that like they're intentionally limiting the availability of this. This is the max that they can go for now. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, they say that they want to put in about 25 billion a year into Sharia stocks. And that's about 3 to 4% a year of their total portfolio. So it's a very slow pace of, if I can use the word Sharia-sization, right?
Sharia-sization.
Very, very slow pace.
Just made that up.
Yeah. And if you look at total equities in Malaysia, the number of equities, 3/4 of them are actually Sharia-compliant. But if you want to look into the investability, how big fund managers like the EPF and others can buy into Sharia stocks, less than 40% of the KL market cap is Sharia compliant. So if everybody wants to get in on the Sharia game, there is actually not enough Sharia stocks there.
You know, speaking of which, you know, Datuk Shahril Rizwan is also coy on the choice of fund that EPF is actually choosing. In fact, the Starbiz exclusive was asking Shahril what kind of funds would he put his savings into, and he said that it was a private decision, and just like voting, you know, every opinion is entitled to their own right.
So he was asked on a personal level where he invests his money?
That's right. The CEO of EPF was asked where he would put his money.
Okay.
And well, I think that Dato' Shahril is not a gambling man, and having held positions, high positions in the corporate sector as well as EPF, he would have achieved a pretty nice nest egg for himself. And given that he's not a gambling man, he probably would be suited to a very balanced investment rather than an aggressive. He would be in that risk off situation right now, right, Dato' Shahril?
Yeah.
So I guess that's the profile that's suitable for him.
Well, the Sharia compliant savings scheme will be open for registration on August 8th, right? So first come, first serve basis. But since we're talking about Sharia compliant finance or Islamic finance, Prima, the affordable housing, is looking to the debt market to issue as much as 15 billion ringgit to fund affordable housing programs until 2020.
I think savings and housing go hand in hand. And when I interviewed Dr. Shahril on the Breakfast Grill, he said that savings in EPF alone is not enough to cater to your retirement. And the EPF right now is talking to government about income policies in order to raise the amount of money that you're making so that you can put more into savings. And I think affordable housing should also be part of that government policy to address your housing needs. And I guess the success of Prima really depends on how much money the government can dole out to build all this affordable housing.
Yeah, and I think essentially everyone is looking for solutions on improving income, and I think this could be one of the clearest way to do that, particularly when Prima addresses the lower middle income segment, which needs this extra income the most.
7:51, and the government has postponed the phased implementation of the B10 biodiesel program for the transport sector. They've postponed it by 1 month to July. Of course, B10 is the blend of the 10% palm methyl ester with 90% petroleum diesel. So I guess this came on the back of a meeting that the government had with the Malaysian Automotive Association, the Japan Automobile Manufacturers Association, as well as the Malaysian Automotive Institute.
That's right. There were a lot of car makers that attended meeting. I think Mercedes and some of the other more, you know, luxury cars that use diesel for the to run their cars, Mercedes-Benz, Scania, Peugeot, Volvo, and so on. They have indicated their acceptance of B10, but there would be challenges in completely implementing that B10 because oil prices have fallen to such a great degree. Now it's now, I guess, a lot cheaper to use some of the more traditional sources of fuel.
But then again, is the policy of supporting CO prices a good thing to do? Because while we understand that the new program is expected to utilize over 700,000 tons of CPO every year, this is still a question of, are we utilizing it at the risk of the environment? And there's a lot of detractors on this program, whether or not it's B5 or B10 or whatever the blend is. There's... You know, the question is, I don't know whether people are enjoying this whole program in the first place. We have the Minister of Commodities, Douglas Ugambas, saying that they can pull this, you know, at a moment's notice. The question is, should we?
So I think it's very interesting that the stated intention of going into a biodiesel policy is to stabilize CPO prices. And I don't know what business it is of the government to stabilize prices, right? It's always a losing game. And when you're kind of playing around with a food product that has other social, negative social implications as well. And this is coming on the back that places like Europe and the United States are in the process of dismantling their bio policy, and here we are, you know, trying to go full on into it.
Speaking of which, this policy is right now rudderless without a captain because Douglas Uga has now returned to the Sarawak State Assembly assisting Tan Sri Adnan Satim in his state government. There is an interim minister right now, Nancy Shukri. She is the interim minister for Plantation Industries and Commodities. So I guess a core policy right now needs full set eyes on this, and we don't have a guy looking at it.
Because it's not just about policy, isn't it? It's the ecosystem of implementation. So you've got to get the car makers on board. You've got to get the petrol stations on board. You've got to educate the public about what's the difference between B10 and B7 and B5 and B20. So I guess all those things really quite... I mean, it's quite startling that you've got, you know, a month or so before implementation, but we still haven't really, you know, thought through the rollout, unfortunately. 7:54 right now. President-elect Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines. His economic team had met with business leaders in order to rally support for a plan to change the country's constitution, which they claim is protectionist. And this, some of the business leaders, including those in Duterte's camp, believe that growth in for the Philippines could be accelerated should the investment limits be removed.
I think the theme for the next few stories that we have is government needing money, right? And the Philippines is one that needs a lot of money. And not only do they need money, they also want to have the Philippines economy get closer to its full potential. Among the industries that are currently protected or limited as far as foreign investments are concerned, you're talking about utilities, mining, and other sectors like media and education.
You know, this is a very core topic for the Philippines because past presidents, including Joseph Estrada, Fidel Ramos, Macapagal Arroyo, they have considered to push for amendments in the constitution to boost growth. The question is, will a person as determined as Duterte is, he's very determined as a character, can he push through these reforms?
You know, the sectors that you mentioned earlier, Jules, utilities, mining, media, education, those seem to be really strategic areas, right? So there must have been a reason why the constitution is protectionist of this areas, of these areas. But as we see more and more countries try to open up and to liberalization. Is this the right move for the Philippines?
I think so. I think that the insecurity of governments to try to get a strategic protection of these industry is unjustified. Because if you look at media and education, people need to have the correct news. Education people need to have the kind of right education. And more importantly, you look at the jobless rate in the Philippines. And here is how Duterte coming in to say that while the past president has done a lot for the Philippine economy, the poor people don't get to participate in that economic growth. 6% unemployment compared to 3.5% in Malaysia and about 5.5% in Indonesia. And don't forget that Indonesia has also embarked on their big bang for investments as well.
Yeah, including tax amnesties and so on. Yeah, I guess these two countries are going to be the eyes to watch for.
Well, you know, India as well, because we've also got news that India is liberalizing its aviation sector. So India will allow foreign entities such as funds and portfolio managers to fully own local airlines, raising that from an earlier cap of 49%. So on the back of this news, Indian airlines really rallied on the stock market. IndiGo, which is operated by Interglobe, rallied more than 6%, and it's the biggest gain that the airline has had in months.
And Jet Airways, also another Indian airline, jumped 24%. That's owned by Etihad. Sorry, 24% owned by Etihad. They jumped yesterday about 7%. But there's a catch to this. You can have a combined foreign ownership of 100%, but each single entity is still capped at 49%, and you got to seek approval if you want to go beyond 49% ownership. So,
what does that do, though? I mean, just make sure that there's some kind of equal shareholding structure.
I guess it's just a policy signal to say that gone are the days of an absolute cap of 49%. And if you want to go higher and you want to make that investment into Indian Airlines, you can do so, but you have to seek approvals from the government. But now a collective ban of foreign investors can actually go up to 100%. So it still doesn't mean that Tony Fernandez can take 100% of AirAsia India, which AirAsia right now owns about 50%, or 49%.
Actually, 49%, yeah. With or without his, what was it, the citizenship or non-resident Indian association?
Overseas citizenship, yeah. People of Indian origin, I believe. Mm-hmm. And yesterday we spoke about the Bank of India, Reserve Bank of India Governor Raghuram Rajan, and how he has announced that he will step down in September. So I guess markets have had some time to digest it. And now there's something called the Rexit.
As opposed to the Brexit, this is Rajan exiting the RBI. Everybody gave the thumbs down for that. Mm-hmm. Still on actually government asking for money, Vladimir Putin is selling a stake in Rosneft, the Russian oil company.
Yeah, so he is considering selling a 19.5% or about 20% stake in Rosneft to India and China. This is apparently the first time that Putin has said that he prefers a joint deal with two nations rather than just a direct sell.
I guess Russia has been brought to their knees as a result of the Ukraine and Syrian situation. And they, after oil price tumbled, they really need the money.
Okay, we've got The Breakfast Grill coming up after the 8 o'clock news bulletin. Ian Clark, the Corporate Vice President and General Manager for Asia Pacific of Motorola Solutions, will be on. So stay tuned on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.